Reno, now say hello.
Hello, hello.
have you ever seen his feet, his bare feet?
He's got luau feet.
No, he's got, well, whatever kind he has, what they are is they're great platforms. He can make cuts so precise because of his feet. He's got the best pair of feet that I've seen in a long time. Moving, changing direction. You know, he was amazing as a pass catcher.
He's actually really bad on the golf course, though. I played him up. He's not very good on the golf course. He's bad.
Come on, I parred the second hole.
He's one of the best Polynesians I've seen out there on the golf course, besides the Fanau brothers. The Fanau brothers are on point. The Fotu family as well, locally, they're very, very good. Salu Marie played at BYU, and then some of the little Chitlins, they're pretty dang good.
Well, there's a girl at Provo High School who's 16 years old.
Speaking to the mic, Dick.
There's a girl at Provo High School, 16 years old, shot 63 the other day.
I like it.
She drives the ball 295 yards. Naoma Saifu. I can't
remember.
Saifu, that's it. Yeah. Her father was a long drive professional, and she's taken up the game.
We need more Polys representing on the PGA Tour. All I got to say is they have that fast twitch muscle fiber, strong, elastic. get it going, Reno. Start the movement. Start the movement.
Guess who's the number third ranked driver on tour right now as far as distance?
Tony?
It's Tony.
Tony Fanau right there. So there's a ton to get to today. We'll talk some BYU basketball. There was a sit-down with Coach Rose today. I think Jay Drew sat down with him as well as some other media members. We'll get to that and some of the news coming out there. Coach Rose states that he has never lost a commitment in his entire career at BYU. Never lost a commitment. So what does that say? Well, we'll talk about it. Maybe Frank Jackson will not decommit, and he is fully committed 100% to BYU. We'll see. But in this first segment, we want to get down to some football talk because we have a football specialist in Reno and also Dick Harmon right next to me. So this first segment, as you all know, is brought to you by CLR Vision. One subject. We might get into two subjects, two sets of eyes, in this case three sets of eyes, and three opinions. It's time for How We See It, brought to you by CLR Vision. How CLR Vision sees it, you only have one set of eyes, for Pete's sake, so take care of them. Superior sports analysis comes from those with keen sight and unclouded vision. Let CLR Vision help you see and analyze the sports you love. From routine vision eye examinations, contact lens fitting, emergency care, and much more. Make an appointment at one of the two locations, Provo or Springville, 801-374-2227. That's 801-374-2227. DrRigTrup.com. First subject, Nebraska spring game. 78,000 fans show up to a Nebraska spring game. We talked about this last week. The possibility of a BYU fan base coming out in that type of numbers. I don't know if it's ever going to be possible. Maybe if they win consistently 10, 11 win seasons, create enough hype. But you know, Bo Pelini, if you look at his resume and compare it to Bronco Mendenhall's in the last 5 years, six, 7 years, they're actually quite similar in winning percentage and what they've been able to accomplish. They go to bowl games. They're not elite. They're a good to great football team. And yet 78,000 fans come out to a spring game. On top of that, at least $10 a ticket. So they're making money on top of that. Will it ever get to the point where BYU will have a spring game in the near future, we'll say, we'll have a spring game similar to a Nebraska spring game? Dick?
I don't think so. I think it's too hard. The fan community is split into several segments. You got your Utes, you got your Cougars, you got your Aggies. You're all drawing to try to get the money and the attention, the butts in the seats. I think culturally in this community, BYU can fans around here can dedicate a certain amount of time and money and resources to this kind of thing. But Saturdays are just fragmented for most families. And we have a guy here expecting his eighth child right now, Reno, and I don't know what your Saturdays are like, but I can only imagine.
No, the Saturdays are pretty hectic. I mean, obviously there's a lot going on and a lot of different things going on with different family members and with regards to even church activities. But the one point that I want to make with regards to what Dick said and the culture out here, I remember one time there was something that UFC, the president of UFC,
Dana White,
was trying to bring UFC to Utah and he wanted to have it on a Sunday. And as big as UFC is, and as crazy as the following, and humongous as UFC
is. And UFC is pretty big here. I mean, as far as like MMA fighters, that you have the Horn Training Center, you have the Pit down here. I mean, there's a lot of MMA potential here.
And it's huge here. So just kind of what you're alluding to, it's huge here. So he says, we're going to have it here. He was told by so many different people about the culture and what's going on and this and that about Sunday. So he says, no, we're UFC. We're going to come. They set a date. Let's just say it never happened. And so it was something that didn't happen. It didn't come to fruition because of the culture here in Utah. And the culture with regards to something like that, Nebraska, it has that culture. BYU, you know, I look at BYU and I think of the spring ball game, and I think, yeah, it's something fun guys would do if they have the time to do it. And we've had some bad lucks with injuries and things like that with the football team, and it's not something that's as entertaining as I'm sure Nebraska is. I think, you know, we had the scrimmage we got to go to at the alumni game, and that was awesome. I think that was fun. It's something that I enjoyed, but at the same time, it's not the event that you get in Nebraska.
It's that time of the year. It's not like everyone's building up and planning on going to the spring game. Now, my question is this. We're blaming it, and it sounds like both of you guys are saying, hey, culturally it just doesn't fit in. You know, our religious schedules, all the activities that are going on like a Saturday. Mind you, it was the spring game, the official spring game, came up on a Friday night. So that might be even more difficult than having a Saturday afternoon game, you know, around 12 or 1 o'clock kickoff to allow maybe those morning sports to get done, those morning activities, and then you go out and have a family routine going on at the spring game. What my question is this. Do you put it on a football program that's saying, well, no one else, they kind of believe no one's going to come out, and they blame it on the culture, so why should we even try to make it into a spectacle? Why should we even try to make it competitive? Why should we try to attract the entire fan base to come out and really invest in the program? Instead, they're like, meh, this isn't a big deal. This is not a big deal. If you want to come out, it's a fan fest. Those that come out, it'll be fun. It's not going to be all that competitive. We're not going to put our starters out there and risk injury because we've had injuries in the past. Yet I go down to Florida, and there's 60,000 fans in the stadium, and it's competitive, ones against ones. They split up the squads, right? You have ones and twos going against each other. And it was, I mean, sales galore. I mean, yeah, they're selling concessions and swag and other things. And it is truly a spectacle, and it's a marketing event.
I think the time about when Reno graduated, things started to change at BYU. The product that you could put out in spring changed because of injuries, guys recovering from surgeries, guys going on missions, graduating, guys that are coming back that you're going to be counting upon for your roster. They're not here yet. And it's just started in the 2000s, mid-2000s, and now where you don't really have a product to put out there. So you change it from a game to a scrimmage. And the scrimmage is limited by who's playing, by how many reps you're going to get. And the whole thing's been watered down, and I think BYU fans have come to realize that this is not a spring football game that's competitive. It's more of a display of certain people for a few plays, and then they change on to something else. The product is not the same as what they're doing at some other schools because they just can't do it.
Just to add to that, they didn't even have a quarterback. I mean, you get a quarterback that's not even going to play in the upcoming season running a scrimmage where you want 70,000 people. It ain't going to work.
I'm talking just half of that. I'm saying
even half of that.
You know, I mean, you know, I agree with you. You know, you don't have a quarterback. So that you know, I always have this pie chart of blame, right? Because we do. I'm not trying to call people out necessarily with this. It's just like you delegate, you know, responsibility, right? Bronco Mantle's all about accountability. Okay, I was a part of the accountability. Reno, you weren't a part of the accountability with Bronco, but you know, we all kind of feel that, you know, it is about accountability. So where do we throw that accountability out to? Do you look at the fan base and say, hey, why aren't you more adamant about your team? You sit here and you talk a big game. You want to be elite. Well, if you get your butts in the stand, that will attract football players like Reno Mahe that are NFL caliber players. Why? Because they like to play in front of a crowd. They like to play in front of people that are passionate about the program. If you surround them with hype, then, oh, man, let's play. That's what they get hyped for. When I played, I mean, if there was no one in the stand, it's a little bit hard to get up for it.
Again, it goes back to the product. I remember the days when the Cougar Club would sell tickets for $5, and they had the winners would get steak, and the losers would get beans.
Yeah.
And it was a competitive atmosphere, and they did that. The BYU can't do that now. I mean, a quarterback that's going to be key to Taysom Hill is currently down in, what, Argentina? Tanner Mangum?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Tanner Mangum was out there playing against Taysom Hill in a game, I think you would attract a lot of people. But you can't sell that. You can't tell your fans. You know, and fans ask me, should I go see the spring game? I says, yeah, if you love BYU football, go look at it and you'll see that. But I'll tell you what, it's watered down. It's not going to be worth it to me to go out there if I was a fan to do it. I go there because of work, because I got to do interviews. But I'd pass.
So I think the thing that makes it unique, and I know fans up north hate this, but what makes BYU unique and something I appreciate about Bronco is that he encourages his players to go on missions. Now, if a coach had the option to just keep his kids here and not send them on missions, I think you'd have great scrimmages. I think you'd have a great turnout. But then again, you ask yourself, as a BYU fan, and I know people, my neighbors do, they talk about this all the time where they're so sick of the church and the football thing. But the reality is, if people just get that in their head, that's what BYU football is. I mean, BYU is a church school. And these coaches, they encourage their players to go on missions. These are things that they encourage. Now, if you're losing a bunch of your roster,
40% every single year.
So you can't sit here and hold coaches or the school or fans accountable. It's just a different beast at BYU.
So we're good with complacency then? We're solid with that?
You can call it complacency, but at the same time...
It's the reality.
It's the reality.
We accept the reality.
It's not so much complacent as it is, it's a bigger picture for these young men and their lives to go on these missions.
Sure.
And so that puts the program in a certain predicament with regards to spring ball and different things like that.
No, it is hard. I'm not saying that this is an easy task. I'm just saying that, you know, I think you always ask questions. I think you always strive to, you know, make it a better experience for fans, for the football program, because ultimately, look, the players want to entertain. They want to play football. They want to be in front of a crowd, and the fans want to be entertained. And you know what? The administration, the football program, they want to make some money. So all three of those things, I think, can be accomplished if you have, like you said, the right product on the field. If you make it into, if you have enough depth, right, that Reno brings up, and if you format it in such a way that it can make it competitive. That's how we see it. Get your routine vision eye examinations, your contact lens fitting, emergency eye care at CLR Vision, two locations, Provo and Springville, 801-374-2227, drrigtrup.com. That's RIGTRUP. Next subject, guys, of how we see it. We've talked about, academics at BYU. It's tough. It's very difficult to get through at least those first 2 years. And I don't know what angle we want to take on this one, but is BYU in a position right now to offer enough academic help compared to a school like University of Utah or even Utah State? Do they have the academic resources similar to a Utah or Utah State? Or are they shorthanded right now?
Well, there's only one really standard for NCAA Division I athletes to meet. But some schools have raised that. It's such in the Big Ten, and it's that way at BYU. I can't speak to that because When I attended college and it was at BYU, it wasn't that hard. You know, I didn't do a lot of homework. I got by. The worst thing I ever did was take physics 100, and I couldn't do the labs because I was too lazy, and I ended up not passing that class. I had to take it about four times. But these guys, you guys, are in...
Well, it's even worse now than when I was there. I didn't even get to experience because I was a JC transfer.
There you go.
You know what I mean? I had that... Look, you can get through BYU if you're a JC transfer. It's much easier. Trust me. Those first 2 years is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, even it's changed since Reno has been there. But These guys now are competing with guys that have 3.9 GPAs and scored 28, 29, or 35 on the ACT test.
Yeah.
They're guys that study, like, all the time. They don't take any time off. They rarely have fun. They're the student leaders in high school. They're student body presidents. They're seminary presidents. I mean, that's the culture that BYU's created now, and it's very hard for these guys, I think, just from an observer.
And the question is, though, are there tools and are there resources to help these young men, these student athletes that are having to work 30, 40 hours a week, but not only like 30 to 40 hours a week of a desk job, right? But hitting each other in the face with another helmet, right? Many concussions everywhere. Physically exhausting workouts where you're pushing yourself to the limit. And then now you got to sit down and let's break down some calculus. Let's break down some physics. Let's go to the lab. And you're competing with those type of individuals. If you don't have help, you know, little baby steps, a babysitter kind of helping you along the way to help break some things down for you, it can get quite difficult. And I think that's why you're seeing some attrition at BYU and some transfers, not because of the honor code, not because of the football program and what they're competing at, not because, you know, they don't get enough exposure because they have that ESPN deal. It's because, man, this is just not the right fit for me, and I'm stressed, and I'm kind of stretched out, very thin, and I just can't succeed.
They do have help. They got some great people up there. I mean, very good people to help.
No, absolutely. With Trevor, Mike, Hambone, and a lot of Sandy, Nicole, and all those people up there, there's definitely a lot of help. I'm going to be honest with you guys. Just thinking about this, it made me realize that I took it for granted, the opportunity and that I had as far as the timely manner of a college athlete. Ben, I think you realize that as a scholarship athlete at BYU, there are some hard things. There's some hard things to deal with. There's, you know, you're tired, you're beat up. But at the same token, I think as athletes, we're, especially football players in a college, we're pretty well taken care of. I mean, outside of putting the spoon in our own mouths, we're pretty well taken care of as athletes, especially football players. And so I don't want to take away from how hard it is to be a collegiate athlete, let alone a football player. But at the same token, I think we're given a lot as a scholarship athlete. And I think a lot of times, you know, I'm a father now. My wife's pregnant with my eighth child.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it. And going to school again is actually a lot easier when you have things in perspective. You know, so my thing to these student athletes is you have all the tools you need to be successful in whatever school you go to. And I think BYU, they make it to where you can succeed. Anyone can succeed. It's just a matter of applying yourself and using all the tools that you're given while you're there, whether you're there at the U. Now, granted, the U is playing with a lot more money. That's public knowledge. You know, joining the Pac-12, they're given over 20 plus million a year that they don't have to go work for. So they can do a lot more. But I definitely think there is still some unique privileges at BYU and things that you can get from BYU. But as a student athlete, specifically scholarship athletes, I think you have all the tools in the world to succeed in college and to get a great education while you're there. That's just my own. I think I wasted a lot of time while I was there with regards to age. I wanted to go have fun. I wanted to go play.
I mean, how often, you know, did you have someone sit you down, a mentor, say, you know, really have a heart to heart with you about your academic career at BYU? You know, or was it just, hey, let's look at the class. What do you like? Okay, this is great. We'll put you in these classes. But really have that heart-to-heart where it's like, okay, we got to take it serious. Because honestly, if you don't have that heart-to-heart with someone, if it doesn't just kind of that light goes on, if that light doesn't go on, then, you know, we do what we do as student-athletes, and we like to have fun. We're playing football. We're in the limelight. You know, there is a certain sense of entitlement. But, you know, sooner – you know, what I've seen is, you know, around that junior year, sophomore year, sometimes that light will finally come on, and it's like accountability, or even after the fact, it's like, oh man, light finally coming on. But it took that heart-to-heart, a mentor, a coach, someone that really spends a lot of time with you to hit you upside the head.
That's the funniest thing about football and an application to life. In football, if you mess up on that play, what does coach tell you?
Let's do it again.
You got the next play. The very next play. You're always about the next play. So if you mess up, oh, you got the next play. Sometimes as a young athlete, you apply that to, oh, I failed this test. Ah, there's the next test. you have a heart-to-heart. It's like, oh, I'm feeling it, right?
I'm feeling it.
I need to go to school. I need to do this. Oh, this beautiful volleyball player is playing. Ah, you know what? Forget that. I'm going to go and watch this volleyball player. Like, we're kind of wired. And some kids.
Because I'm going to make a play on that next one.
Yeah.
I got that touchdown.
It's the mulligan concept.
Yeah, I got the next one. Whereas you get some kids that are brought up and that have a foundation. They know what to look forward to. My parents didn't go to college. There was no one there to tell me. But I'm not going to take away from all the athletic academic advisors at BYU who have that heart-to-heart with you every other day.
Yeah.
I mean, they have guys that track. They have guys out there that track the players that need to be in class and what they're doing. So when you don't do well in school, a lot of that is just on you. And for me, that was my experience. When I didn't do well, that was on me. When I apply myself and I know what to expect and I know what to expect of myself and put the time in, I did great.
No, I'll tell you what. You know, the guy that helped me out the most was probably Hambone, Jim Hamblin. I mean, that's who we worked with every single day. He'd play the guitar for me when I was feeling anxiety and stress. He'd make me some Spam Musubi or whatever that stuff is right there in his office. Give me a big hug and a good game as I walked out. He's like, "All right, go get him, Criddle. Why don't you go get yourself married too?" And that didn't work out for me. But at least I did graduate from BYU. I didn't fail econ more than once. Hey, when we come back, Reno Mahi's still in the house. He's going to join us for one more segment. Dick Harmon, also from the Deseret News. I want to talk about Polynesian Pipeline. We're going to get into recruiting here, heated recruiting, you know, during the summer months and close to going into fall ball. And I think for BYU to truly get back to its elite nature, I think you have to have a very strong Polynesian pipeline. And right now, you got Paulie's going a bunch of different directions. Pac-12, they're going across to Michigan. I think it was Brian Monet out of Highland went all the way to Michigan. He's playing with Harbaugh now, even before. But, I mean, they're going everywhere. And before it used to be, you know, BYU, Utah, mostly West Coast. Former NFL punt returner for the Philadelphia Eagles. Special team specialist is what he was. Also great running back out of the backfield. Has moves galore, footwork that Dick Harmon says no one can touch. He's got that luau feet. Don't you call it luau feet when you got like flat feet, but you know, like they're like platforms?
I don't know what you guys call it. I don't know.
It has a lot to do with that, but it's also the fast twitch muscle fiber that's attached to those feet.
Mm-hmm. I still remember, real quick, let me reminisce about another time that I saw. So I played at Eastern Arizona Junior College. The year before that, Reno had transferred down and played at Dixie State just for, I think, a year. And so we were watching film of the prior season. And Reno takes the opening, he didn't do the kickoff return. Opening play, you know, just a standard, you know, like a, you know, 35 blunt. He kind of, you know, gets to go off tackle or something like that. He cuts it into the B gap, makes three people miss, and then he's off to the races. So he's running all the way down the field, but he gets hocked like right at the end. He still got a touchdown, but they caught up to you a little bit. But you made like three or four people miss, Reno. Make everybody look silly. That's what Reno does. So thank you for coming in. I wanted to talk about the Polynesian pipeline, guys. BYU has done, I think, a good job in the past. Last year they signed Uriah Leatawa, three, four-star defensive end that had offers from Stanford and many of the other Pac-12 schools. 4.0 GPA was everything that you would want out of a BYU kid as far as fit is concerned. But they've missed out on a lot of Polys as well. But granted, there's a lot of Polynesian football players out there right now. There's more so than than ever. So where does BYU's Polynesian Pipeline stand? Dick, let's start with you. Is it healthy? Is it still, I mean, it's not what it once was, the dominant Polynesian Pipeline that Lavelle set up, but is it still healthy?
I think it's on the upswing. I think it got a little stagnant for a few years, but I think it's on the upswing, and I think you can credit that to Mark Achiuwa. Here's a guy that has a law degree. He's a great example to young people. He can go into homes and say, you know, I'm a Samoan. I grew up in Hawaii. I wasn't a very good student. This is what's happened to me in my life, and I can sell that. And it takes more role models like him, I think, on BYU's part to put into homes to offset some of the negative recruiting that is done against BYU. And I think that with Robert and I and Mark Achiuwa on staff, they're getting the ear of those who account for scholarships and are making the case for Polynesian players and standing up for them. And I think it's on the upswing. Am I wrong, Reno?
No, I think you're absolutely right, Dick. I think one of the biggest issue is that the secret is out. I think earlier around, you know, Lavelle's heyday, and a lot of times he was doing really well, you didn't have Michigan's, you didn't have OU, you didn't have all these other coaches that are actively wanting the Polynesian players.
Oregon.
I mean, you name some of these big schools where, I mean, you've got Polynesian kids that are playing for LSU, for Alabama, that are going to these schools. So the secret is out, and so BYU has to, before it was just what, Hawaii, possibly the U and maybe USC.
Stanford dabbled into it, actually. I think Stanford was the first. They offered Jack Thompson. And then they offered Lemma's dad. He played running back, Lemma Harrington. So his dad played at Stanford, a running back there. So I mean, but that was like late, that was like in the 70s or something like that. But one of the first Polys to play here in the States.
Well, you had IU playing at Arizona State way back in the 70s, I believe. And Jack Thompson is actually Washington State.
Well, Washington State.
Yeah, he was at Washington State. But you had it here and there. They had one player there from the islands. And so that one player would tell the coach, hey, I got a cousin that's awesome. So they'd bring him there. You never really had coaches flying out there. But because of all these different things, you have the Polynesian All-American game in Southern California, where all these coaches are able to go watch these kids. I mean, you got so many different avenues to these kids now, to these, I mean, primarily the Pacific Islander kids. And so, whereas before, BYU kind of had the monopoly on the Polynesian kids, if they got offered from BYU in Utah, they always went to BYU. You know, if I remember correctly, I think the first kid that I ever remember getting offered by BYU and not coming and going to the U was Kautai. And then there was a little trend there where Coach Mack started getting all those kids from Hawaii, you know, and all.
And Kafusi was up there coaching too,
yeah.
Right? And then got even more, yeah.
So, again, I think it equates to the secret. It's not a secret anymore. I think everyone's recruiting these Polynesian kids. During the break, you talked about the kid in Michigan.
Yeah, Brian Mone. So he wasn't even considering any of the local schools. I mean, he had his heart. Once he got that Michigan offer, it was just like, oh yeah, I'm going to Michigan. Why was that?
Well, the other thing too, I think you're getting a group of like Reno. Reno was not, he was not raised in Tonga. His mother and father were. His uncle and I went to school at Liloana High School in Tonga, and a lot of those guys that grew up and were early in the transition of migration here to the America. Like Reno said, were BYU fans. They grew up, and that was the church's team. And a lot of their parents went to BYU Hawaii, used to be CCH, and they wanted their children to come to BYU. But things started changing when it started branching out, and now we have a new generation of athletes that have been born in America, raised in America, gone to American high schools, and I think they have more of a global look at what they want and where they want to go. And that's made it very competitive for BYU to keep back in the game for the top guys.
So what does BYU need to do in order to take it to the next level? Like what? How does BYU cater more so to the Polynesian athlete? Because they got to step up their game, right? If you want to get the elite, and attract the elite, then you got to do different things than what the competition is doing. I don't know what that entails, Reno. Only the community and the culture can dictate that. And I think Markey and Coach Anai and even Coach Holiday, I think they're in tune with some of the changes that are going on, but in your opinion, what can be done to attract those elite Polynesian players to come to BYU?
I think it's just like anything else with the rest of the fans. You know, if they're in a Big Five, you know, one of the Big Five conferences, I think that would help. But at the same token, I think BYU has done such a great job so far to be acknowledged as a Big Five opponent. Right.
Yeah.
So I think
they're already in that motion. Yeah,
they're in that motion to where they can use that since they're not in a Big Five conference. They can use that. They can use the fact that all these Big Five conferences are recognizing them as a Big Five conference opponent. So it's almost like they can enjoy it without having to be a part of it, which is kind of unique. Now, when you're talking about recruiting Polynesian kids, there's kind of an act to it. And
I think there's an art. There's definite art to it.
Absolutely. And I think Markey's someone that kind of figures that out. Coach Atsuwai kind of has, you know, I don't know the rest of them personally and know their personalities, but there's certain personalities to Polynesian families. Like I always tell, you know, neighbors and stuff that ask me the exact same question. And my thing is, a lot of times you don't recruit the player. A lot of people think you recruit players. You don't recruit players. Polynesian people, you find out who is the one that makes the decision for this family.
Yeah.
It might not even be the mom or dad. It can be an uncle. And if that uncle is the one that makes the decisions for that kid, then as a recruiter, you have to do your homework. You have to know these things. And then you go in the house and you say, I'm going to meet with that uncle. And in some houses, you go in, you got to take your shoes off. You know, and not taking your shoes off could be all of it. There's a story. I don't know what coach. I'm not going to get into names or what have you. He didn't eat the food. But another coach came in right after. He ate the food. And that was it for that Polynesian parents.
That's it.
It's something as simple as that, but it goes a long way with these parents. And so it's just knowing the little things of the culture. And that's just not Polynesian. That's any culture you're going to. That's any area. But I think these coaches know that. I think these coaches are getting that's where Dick was alluding to earlier, where there's an upswing in it. Because it's, you know, it's possible that they've learned. And, you know, where they're, as your profession, I'm sure they're continuing to learn. So.
And there's another part of it. And Reno knows this better than anyone. His story and his background is that these Polynesian, many of the Polynesian recruits do not want to tell a recruiter no. They want to tell him yes.
Yeah, Jake Caressa, I think, said like yes to USC, Oregon, BYU, everywhere he went. He's
Reno,
like,
Reno
yeah.
said yes to Ron McBride and to Lavelle Edwards. I mean, yes, I come and coach.
Yeah. Mine was a little bit different. I don't know if you know what happened with mine.
Okay, go ahead.
Mine was a little bit different. So I used to wear my U of U jacket. Because my older brother played at the U, so I had all his, you know, hand-me-downs. I used to wear that to the BYU football camps. And I used to go to the BYU football camps. My Uncle Joel would take me to the camps. My mom, and you know, it was a fun deal. But I used to wear my U of U. I was going to the U. I was going to become a U. And while I was at the U on my recruiting trip, I was all about it. There was a few things that happened on my recruiting trip there that made me a little suspicious. But I was a U. I hated BYU.
Mm-hmm.
And I told McBride I was coming, and I was going. I had no doubt in my mind. So then he would ask, well, why are you going on the BYU recruiting trip next week? I was like, it's a free trip.
Yeah, you get to have some fun.
I mean, not that it's just Provo. I'm not just, I went from Salt Lake to Provo. They take you snowmobiling. I mean, they wine
good food,
and dine you.
Ruby River.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I just wanted to go on a free trip. So I go on the free trip. I'm not coming. I'm not sold. Sweet.
Who was your host?
Kalani Sitake, Coach Sitake, and Justin Enna.
That's a good group right there. That's a good host.
They were awesome. They were awesome. I actually took that trip with Sione Havili and
to USC. Yeah.
No, his younger brother was Sione. Stanley. His younger brother Stanley
went to USC.
That's
no,
right.
Me and Sione both committed here. Sione ended up Texas Tech.
That's right.
Actually. But So I'm on the recruiting trip. It's done. We have the little meeting with Lavelle, and it's like, you know, it's awesome. Hey, coach, thanks for the free trip. I come out of the room. My mom pulls me aside, and she tells me to turn around and go back and tell him I'm coming. And I'm like, what? And I'm looking at her like, no. And you know how it is with Tongan moms. Don't make me tell you again. So I turn around. I walk back in the office, and I'm like, coach, my mom told me to tell you I'm coming.
And good so, for Ava.
And so I'm coming to BYU, and that was the hardest call when I had to call McBride.
That would be hard.
That was tough because he had – I mean, he was my dude. I love that man. Till this day, he still rips me up and down to this mm-hmm. day. But, you know, I called him, and yeah, he didn't have nice words to say to me.
Oh, man, not at all. Ronnie Mack's a competitor. He has got a big smile on his face, though.
I love that dude.
When it comes down to, he's an extreme competitor, and I'm sure he was livid.
He was.
But the 13th apostle spoke. And your mama listened. Yeah. The 13th apostle spoke, and your mama listened. Hey, this is what we're doing. And that goes back to what you were talking about. Who is the decision maker of the family? Who is that chief? I don't know if it's chiefess. You know, who is making that decision for the family? And for you, it sounded like it was mama. Mama was the one that was the end all be all.
Not what he says is true. I remember when. Nagata,
yeah,
was being recruited. It was down at the bottom line, and I drove up by Highland High School, the Sizzler up there, and I met his mother, Olga, bless her soul. She's not with us anymore, but I sat down with her.
Ofa.
Was it Ofa or Olga?
Ofa.
And she, which means love in Tongan, but she was there, and I had a boyhood friend from Tonga, Tamani Tonga. Was with me because she didn't speak English really, really well and wasn't comfortable. And we had a great talk, and she said, my son is going to BYU.
Yeah.
And she said that over and over and over again. And I wrote that up. I think when Jay Druth and Tribune, he got the same feedback when he talked to the family. But the decision maker in that happened to be an uncle who had ties to Oregon State and wanted him to go there, or to Oregon, excuse me. And I'm trying to remember his name, but he was a brother of a BYU recruit that came, and then he left. He never came back. Ken Schmidt didn't want him, and he didn't come back. And so there are some feelings there.
So the rumor has it, it's his namesake.
Yes, Haloti.
Yep.
But the last name is different. It wasn't Nada. It was
Moala.
Moala, that's right. Tevita Moala was the athlete that signed at BYU, went on a mission, and then wasn't welcome back. And I think that was his brother. So there was a little bit of a twist there that a lot of people didn't understand. And when Haloti put his foot down for his nephew, the decision was made.
Don't mess with the Polynesian community. All I got to say, you better mind your P's and Q's, my friend. It's just like the whole deal with, you know, I think Gabe Reed. And we're up against a break here, but Gabe Reed out of Tempe, ultimately – you know, he was not offered before another athlete that is also a D1 football player, but he was the backup, right? And there was, you just can't do that, right? That's a faux pas. And you learn, you live and you learn. But if BYU wants to be elite, you can't have those faux pas. We all understand that people are going to make mistakes, right? And they were still in that battle with Gabe Reed, but you started off about a mile behind with just simple etiquette, right?
Well, there's decision mates, too. I mean, BYU's at the point now where they've got so many families, Polish families they recruit. I mean, his brother-in-law, for example.
You got to know everyone's related to everybody.
But then they made a decision to go with someone else, and then you got the Tonga family, and they're wondering, now what's, you know, Reno's in the middle of it. And, you know,
those decisions. That's why we need a very competent, you know, well-balanced, you know, I think alumni liaison and or, you know, and that's able to just come together and teach people some things. But that's just my opinion. When we come back, we'll have our Cougar Insider Report. We have to say au revoir, adieu, farewell to Reno, because he's got to run some errands. Reno, you've been on point all day. Great stuff. If we can do anything for you here at ESPN 960, please give us a holler. Have a great day. And how do you say farewell in Tongan?
We'll do it in Samoan.
In Samoan.
I'm Tongan, but I like doing it in Samoan. Pasa fua.
All right, there you go. Pasa fua.
Thanks for having me,
yep,
guys.